This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Summer of waiting is over. We've got new kits, new arrivals, fans back at St Mary's. There's plenty to be excited about on the eve of another season in the Premier League. Hello and welcome to a brand new season of the Total Saints podcast. My name is Martin Stark, and each week I'll be joined by some familiar voices to reflect on all things Southampton Football Club. Before we start, I must just mention the big name departure that the whole city has been talking about this week. We knew it was coming, but it certainly doesn't make it any easier. Ben Stanfield, founder and host of the Total Saints podcast, is stepping back after 4 years at the helm. I'd like to personally thank Ben for all his hard work and dedication to this podcast. I'm pleased to say that Ben will continue to work behind the scenes, as well as occasionally joining us to provide some alternative punditry throughout the season. And as always, a big thank you to all the patrons who have signed up to join us again this year, because without your continued support, none of this is possible. Now, back for another year, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by our panel of Saints experts. Owner of Saints Web, Steve Grant, is back. How was your summer, Steve?
It's been interesting. All the Euros, been to all the Euros games, obviously, apart from the one in Rome that obviously we weren't allowed out of the country for. And I was one of probably thousands of people who picked up the Wembley variant of COVID immediately after the final. So that was less fun.
But you're all good and ready to go now.
Yes. Yeah. Season has pretty much started, really, hasn't it? Went to Sutton United's inaugural game in the Football League yesterday at Forest Green Rovers. So everything is kind of in place now, isn't it, I think?
Well, it's great to have you back. Also with us is writer of the blog League One Minus 10, Glenn Delacour. Fully rested and ready to go again, Glenn?
I'm not sure. I think I'm all footballed out, to be honest. After the Euros, it's like, well, there's 4 weeks to the season start, and it's like, oh my God, it doesn't seem to be much time at all. But yeah, so since the Euros, well, during the Euros as well, I've been trying to haul my carcass around a cricket pitch with mixed levels of success, as in not much. And I'm quite looking forward to it all starting.
Well, it's great to have you back. And we're delighted to be joined once more by The Athletic's dedicated Saints reporter, Dan Sheldon, who decided to have last week off. Nice quiet week off, Dan?
I've had 2 weeks off. So yeah, it's been really nice. Thank you very much.
You haven't missed much.
No. Although as even in this job, you're never really truly off. And yeah, last week was definitely a case of that.
Well, it's fair to say we've got plenty to talk about. So welcome to episode 163 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenn Delacour and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
Now, we put a poll on Twitter this week, and it turns out that the topic that people are most interested to hear us discussing is new signings. 56.5% of people voting on new signings as the first topic. We can only talk about new signings because there's some money in the bank, which came about on Wednesday of last week after the, I think it's fair to say, surprise sale of Danny Ings. How did they manage to keep that a secret from you, Dan?
Well, it wasn't really a secret to us. So at The Athletic, we had wind of that story at 8:37 was the first message that I received that morning. We waited all day to get a third source on the story, and then Aston Villa put a statement out, and yeah, our story went. So it was a surprise at first. In the morning, it was a surprise, but by the time it was announced, I mean, we'd kind of known for 8 hours or so. So it wasn't too much of a surprise towards the end.
And I think it's fair to say, I know you guys have spoken about this at length over the last year or so, but I think it's fair to say it was a deal that had to happen, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, if the reported numbers are accurate, then I don't think there was any alternative but for us to accept the offer. He clearly wasn't going to sign a new contract with us. And I think if we were expecting slightly more illustrious teams to come in for him and sort of start some sort of bidding war, then I think with the amount that Villa had put on the table, I think you're going to be very disappointed if you think that Spurs are going to get involved at that sort of price, maybe Arsenal, maybe at a push as well. And I think we kind of realised, okay, well, Villa are throwing money around. He's quite happy to go there, so let's just draw a line under it and get it done, rather than dragging it out into that tedious period in the last sort of 3 or 4 days before the end of the transfer window, when we've already played probably 5 games and it serves nobody's purpose really. So best to get it done now. It's like pulling a plaster off a wound, isn't it? You just get it done, take the hairs with it, and get on with life really.
That's a lovely image. Glenn, I know you were chatting to some Villa fans this week on a podcast of theirs. Was it a surprise for them, or were they in the market for a striker?
I think they were, but I think, yeah, basically the guy I spoke to, I think it was a surprise to him. And the reason I was on the podcast that they did, which was, I can't remember what it was called, something to do with Paul McGrath.
For the love of Paul McGrath, wasn't
that's
it?
That's the one, that's the one. So I think they... You know, like you see opposition players and you see them maybe 2 games a season when you really pay attention to them. They didn't really sort of like know what sort of player they were getting. So they were interested in finding out about, you know, how he was going to fit into their team. Now, I mean, not that I care too much about what Villa are going to do, but they're going to have to completely remodel the way they attack because everything went through Grealish last season. And of course, he's not going to be there. So, you know, that was the angle they were coming at. I think it was a bit of a surprise to them. I mean, the guy who I was speaking to was basically saying that he had bought into the narrative that Ings was going to go to a Champions League club or he was going to stay where he was. And I think that's a narrative that a lot of people, including, you know, probably including the board at Saints, probably bought into. And that's part of the issue why it seems to have been a slightly terse partner of the ways.
Is that why it sticks in the throat a bit more? I'm thinking when Jose Font went to West Ham, they make all the noises about going for the trophies and the Champions League and then move to another mid-table club, but somebody that would be really, you know, quite happy with a top six finish.
You have to say Villa are probably upwardly mobile at the moment with the money they were throwing around, but they've just lost their best player. So, and that can happen to virtually anyone. I think it does stick in the throat a little bit. And, the statements that have come out, or the lack of statement that's come out of the club and the statement from Ings, to me, they say it's not been it's not been nice and friendly, the parting of the ways. So maybe Dan knows a bit more about that. But it just seems to me like Saints offered to make him the highest paid player in Saints history under the impression that he was going to move to a Champions League club or stay. And it seems to me like they've probably taken it quite personally.
Well, we always wait for that post on Instagram or that post from Twitter thanking the fans, and it seemed to take its time. And Dan, I was reading your article today. There were doubts in Ralph's mind about whether he might even start him for the first couple of weeks of the season based on his attitude and his pre-season performances.
Yeah, so if I just sort of take it back to the start, I think, you know, sort of 48 hours before Ings joined Aston Villa, nobody at Saints was expecting him to leave. They just didn't think it was going to happen. Aston Villa thought they were getting Tammy Abraham. And then I think when the kind of figures were presented in front of them, thought, oh, that's actually rather a lot of money. Then in that situation, they were desperate to get a striker in before Jack Grealish left. They didn't want Grealish to go without a striker coming in. And people at Southampton I've spoken to, as the piece that went online on Sunday kind of reflects, were surprised when they made that offer in terms of how much it was, because I know of another Premier League club that offered less than half of that. So I think when it was like that, it was, yeah, okay, the Athletic did the story where he turned down a contract. He wasn't going to sign. That was clear. And then in pre-season, you hear kind of mumblings that he's not looking as interested as he once was, perhaps isn't as sharp as he may have been in the previous summer and the one before that. And I think body language is a big thing. And I don't think many were. Yeah, I think people had noticed perhaps that, this wasn't the Ings that they were used to seeing. So Ralph, as is his responsibility, was looking at all different options. And Nathan Teller and Shay Adams were used quite a lot in training as a combination. I think we've seen that in pre-season. And it got to the point where with Ralph, as you'll all know, he is that kind of, you're either with me or you're not. And if you're not, then let's shake hands, be amicable and move on, because I've only got time for people that are with me. I think him going to Villa was the right move, the right time. It gives, it stops, as the other guys have said, talk about is he staying, is he going for the next kind of 3 weeks. It gives them a bit of money now to reinvest in the squad. So I think, as I say, it's one of those where if Southampton stay up at the end of next season and they've got a striker that scored 20 goals, everyone will say it was a genius move. If they go down, people will probably look at that, the deal to let Ings go, as one of the reasons. But, it's way too early to start talking about all of that. But no, yeah, good move all round, I think, for Ings. And as I say, it's a lot of money for the club. So,
and it means we can draw a line under it and stop talking about it now. So
exactly. So, yeah, hopefully the next time we talk about it will be when Saints play Aston Villa. And
we all remember the 25 goals, I think it was the year before. 13 last season in all competitions. I think Ralph said this week he just needs the others to step up and maybe score an extra 4 goals each, which doesn't seem a lot, but it's probably easier said than done. Before we get on to new signings, Steve, can you see where there might be some more goals coming from the current crop of players? I'm talking Long and Redmond. Do you think they've got an extra 4 goals in them?
Redmond, yes. Long, to be honest, if Long's playing very much this season, I'll probably be a little bit disappointed, given that obviously he was farmed out on loan for the second half of last season, did okay to start with for Bournemouth, but then got injured and basically his season was over in, March, I think. Ultimately, we've got two backup strikers in him and Obafemi, and if we're going to give either of them a game, then personally, I'd prefer it to be the younger of the two, given that he's the one that's potentially got a future with the club. But if the rumours are true, then we're about to sign another player out of Chelsea's academy on loan as a striker, who's presumably not going to be expected to start straight away. So therefore, you're looking at, surely you're then offloading Long or Obafemi, some whether it's permanent or on loan themselves, and you're then not quite sure how the makeup of that attack's going to look. But I think, in terms of the extra goals, I think Redmond certainly can provide those. Whoever we have leading the line alongside Shay Adams has got to come up with the goods as well. I think Adams has shown enough improvement that there's more goals to come from him, and I think just generally across the team, we don't score that many goals from defence, even though we've been relatively strong in set pieces the last 2 or 3 years. It'd be nice if Bednarek could score in a game where we don't go 2-0 up and lose. But yeah, we'll see what the fullbacks look like. Obviously, Walker Peters scored in midweek, so that bodes quite well. It'd be interesting to see how Perrault gets on the other flank, because quite attacking numbers for Brest last season, didn't he? So we'll see how that goes, I think.
And at the time of recording, we haven't got a signing over the line just yet, he says as he refreshes his timeline, but things seem to be developing quite quickly at the moment, Dan.
Yeah, it's been a very busy kind of 24-48 hours at St Mary's, I think. I think it's well documented they really like Adam Armstrong at Blackburn. That interest hasn't gone away. As I reported earlier, they've essentially left a take it or leave it offer for Blackburn to accept or reject. But I think, Blackburn are kind of in a little bit of position of power with that one. Southampton aren't the only team interested in Armstrong. You've got Palace like him, Norwich also like him. So if Southampton don't want to get into a bidding war, then they either just match or just meet what Blackburn want or walk away from it. I don't think that deal is dead in the water yet, but the sense I get is that Blackburn perhaps need to come down a little bit if Southampton are to have their bid accepted. In terms of the one that's come out tonight is that Armando Broja. Yeah, so that would be a third signing from Chelsea's academy. I don't know too much about him. He's obviously signed a new contract at Chelsea, which, I mean, they hand out contracts to everyone in terms of their academies. But he comes, I think, highly regarded. You know, I think he's quite a big centre forward. Whereas Danny Ings was quite on the smaller side of 6 foot, I think Armando's pretty tall. So that will add something a bit different to Southampton's forward line. But it's also very much, you know, it's not going to be Armando Broja and no one else. The desire is to bring in two forward players. So it'd be Armando Broja plus someone else. I think ideally you'd want that someone else to have a bit more experience. I don't think you can kind of go into the Premier League season with all due respect to Shane Long and Michael Obafemi as those two and Shea Adams, really. You need a bit more experience. I'd quite like, sort of similar to when they did with Theo Walcott last summer, I personally would like them to go out and sign a striker that's kind of on that 29, 30, 31. Just get them on loan or something for a season, but there aren't many available. So yeah, it's kind of non-stop at the moment, I think, behind the scenes at St. Mary's in terms of trying to get deals done. They know the season is edging closer by the day. They want new faces in, but then they're not the only team looking for strikers. So it's a very competitive market. And I can understand why supporters get frustrated that, you know, you might think, well, Danny Ings left at the start of this week, we should have someone in by now. But, you know, for every striker that's available, you've probably got two or three, maybe four Premier League clubs looking at them. So Southampton have to deal with that and have to be a little bit clever with some of the deals they do. As is this Broja one, they're obviously trying to think a little bit outside the box to get someone who clearly has some quality in. But yeah, I expect it to continue to be a very busy few days up to next weekend.
I quite like this new Monday morning routine of announcing an exciting new player from Chelsea. I think if that happens every Monday, then that's then I think we're in for a good season. Any of those names excite you, Glenn? Would any of those make you happy going into that opening game on Saturday?
Well, I saw Dan's article today. Odson Edouard from Celtic was mentioned. Obviously, that will be on the expensive side, as would, as we alluded to earlier, Tammy Abraham. But the other names mentioned, I mean, yeah, the Chelsea kiddie, I don't know anything about him. Adam Armstrong has been spoken about. I think we've all done a little bit of research onto what sort of player he is. That will be okay, but I think we'll miss the boat on that one somehow because other teams are interested. The one that has thankfully been ruled out, Alexander Sorloth, he just looked like a new Guido Carrillo to me. You know, nothing in his career that suggested that, you know, by his mid-20s, nothing in his career that suggested he was going to be a decent option in the Premier League in one good season in Turkey. And I think that's not the best of leagues.
Are you referring to the spell at Palace with no goals?
Well, no, not just that. I mean, he went back, having scored all the goals in Turkey, he went back to Leipzig last year and couldn't get in the team, basically. Played a load of games as a sub, scored 5 goals in 30 appearances or something. So, I think he was young when he was at Palace, but obviously he didn't score in the league. So it's not that so much. It's what he's done since. We signed Carrillo based on nothing, basically, and Sorloth has got a little bit more about him. He scored goals at international level, where you do play a lot of very weak sides, and he had that season in Turkey. But I'm hoping Dan's right with that one. I think it would be a very big ask to expect that one to work out well.
Do you think it's more of an impact player that we need at the moment? Is that got to be the first priority?
I mean, there's going to be an element of a gamble about whoever we sign. Because we're Southampton, we're not shopping at Harrods, are we? Let's face it. It's going to be, you know, and this is why we've got to look at Danny Ings' original signing and say how inspired it was. You know, we signed him for 20 million at age 26. We're selling him for more than that at age 29. So both from a business point of view and a football point of view, that was a great signing, and we've got to try and do the same thing again. I mean, out of those names mentioned, I don't know, probably Odson Edouard would be the one that I'd I'd most like. And yeah, we do need someone to come in and have an impact, because I'm not convinced that Nathan Teller is ready to be a starting player, you know, and score 15, 16 goals this season. And we do need to get more goals in the team. You know, the question you asked Steve about, could we get more goals out of other people in the team? You know, I think we're severely struggling in other areas. So yeah, we do need someone who's going to come in and actually be decent at Premier League level.
We should say there have been a couple of new signings. Obviously, the first one, we got the Theo Walcott deal over the line, and then Peru joining for, we think, about £11 million. A couple of exciting new prospects as well from Chelsea. What have you made of the new signings, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sort of slight change of approach, in that obviously everyone's aware that Chelsea stockpile all these fantastically talented youngsters, and then there's absolutely zero pathway through to the first team. So why not give them that opportunity? And I mean, I've seen very little of either of the two that we've brought in previously, but certainly from reports I've read from people who have watched quite a lot of them, they sound like absolutely kind of solid signings for us, and players that are going to be on the fringes or pushing to be in the first team at some point this season. I mean, judging by Livramento's impact on yesterday afternoon against Athletic Club, it's weird that we've actually got some genuine competition for places at right back, when we kind of just assume that Walker Peters has got this nailed down. I mean, don't get me wrong, I fully expect Walker Peters to be the starting right back for some time, but at least we've, even in this brief 45 minutes, we've seen, okay, if Walker Peters has one of his little niggles like he did midway through last season, we don't need to bring him back too quickly, because we've now got an option. And I think that's absolutely key, because the main problem we had last season, wasn't it, was when we had like 9 players out injured at the same time, and you're kind of almost forced to try and bring them back too quickly, and then they're not fit enough at that point, and you get overrun by teams, and that's where we lost games in that kind of February March period, where we were absolutely dreadful, was just because we had no legs. And getting some youth in the team, and players that seem to be of the required level. I mean, obviously you're not going to know for certain until you put them up against quality opposition. But no, I like the kind of slight change of attack that we've gone in there. But I think when it comes to the striker situation, I think we need to, probably given that we've lost someone, as you say, who's got what 38 league goals in the last two seasons combined, I think we need to look a little bit bigger in terms of kind of I mean, I hate the word ambition, but that's kind of the sort of catch-all phrase for what we need to look at there. So I think if Tammy Abraham's available and he would take the same wages that we offered Danny Ings, then I would say absolutely dive in on him. He's a kid who's been proven to score goals at Premier League level. I mean, yes, in a good team that creates loads of chances, but who's to say that we can't create chances?
It does seem unlikely, doesn't it, at the moment? A lot's been made of the number 3 shirt being vacant as well, Dan. Is that an area you think they're still trying to do some work and maybe get something over the line? The attentions have all been on the striker at the moment, but do you think there's still some work going on behind the scenes there?
Well, I think the priority, as you've just said, is the forward players. I think then you could possibly start looking at a versatile player that could sort of feature as a number 6, could play as a centre-back, also able to cover as a full-back. Sort of similar to Prowsey, really. You know, we've all seen Prowsey play in different positions at, you know, midfield and in defence. I think that would be the sort of player they'd go for if they could find one and if they can get one. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not really a shirt numbers person, to be honest. I think you could start reading into all sorts if you start looking at, well, we haven't got a number 7 or whatever it is. So yeah, they want 2 forwards, and if they're going to make a third signing, I'd expect it to be a sort of number 6 / centre back / full back, jack of all trades, if they can get one.
And I think I know what the answer is going to be. The James Ward-Prowse thing, that is just an injury, isn't it, at the moment? We shouldn't read anything more into that.
Yep, so he's got an issue with his knee. I Yeah, I'd be absolutely gobsmacked. And I mean gobsmacked if he is not a Southampton player come the end of the transfer window. It's just a knee at the moment, and Ralph's keen to ensure he, you know, he has the best chance possible to make the Everton game next weekend. So yeah, that's why we've not seen Prowsey in the last couple of games during pre-season.
Okay, well, I think we're in for a busy couple of days. I think we could all agree on that. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 48 hours or so.
You're listening to the Total Saints podcast, going to the heart of all things Saints FC.
Let's move on to pre-season, because a couple of games, a couple of good results early on, obviously putting a few past Swansea and Cardiff. Mixed result on Saturday. Any standout performances, any concerns for you, Glenn? Or can we not read too much into pre-season?
Can't read too much into pre-season. I remember there was a season in the 90s where we had a 100% pre-season record, and then we lost 9 out of the first 10.
So that when we used to go to Northern Ireland to beat everybody 9-0?
I don't know. Yeah. We used to go, you know, Faroe Islands or something. No, it was sort of Scandinavia somewhere, play all these third division sides. Yeah, you can't read anything into pre-season. You can just sort of look generally at how sharp the team looked. To me, the team looked sharp. You know, most of the players, apart from Danny Ings, looked sharp. And everyone looked very fit. You know, we were sort of really, in the Cardiff and Swansea games, we were pressing the ball very well. And, you know, that's a good thing. But you can't, you know, someone sticking a couple of goals in the net against Swansea, you know, in the last 20 minutes, it doesn't mean anything with regards to how they're going to go when the real football starts. I think it was probably a positive thing that we got beat yesterday, because it stops you thinking that, you know, we can just roll over anybody and everything's going to be fine. You know, we got beat relatively comfortably yesterday, and that will put everybody on their toes. I think, you know, some fans overreact to, you know, we smash someone 4-0 and everyone thinks we're great, and then we lose a game and everyone thinks we're dreadful. The truth is always somewhere in the middle, and you just got to take pre-season for what they are. They're just friendlies. If we played a friendly in mid-season and got beat or whatever, no one would care too much. So why do people care so much pre-season? We look sharp, we look fit. You can look at some of the new players, like, you know, you can work out what sort of footballer Perot is. I mean, you could see that he wants to defend on the front foot. He's very quick at closing people down. And, you know, I like that. You know, I think that's a positive thing. You could tell that Livramento won't be a sub for very long. They'll find a position for him somewhere. He looks to have a lot about him. So that's the sort of things you can take from pre-season. But, you know, just because certain players score a couple of goals against weaker sides, it doesn't really tell you too much about how they're going to go when the season starts for real.
I did see somebody suggest that Chelsea might buy back Livramento before the start of the season, because he was looking that sharp yesterday. But Steve, what about left-back Gineppo? Seems to be getting a bit of a run out of there. Is that a concern for you? Have we decided that's
an absolutely terrifying prospect.
Get your money on a red card if he ever starts at left-back.
I mean, I quite like the idea if you're playing against a championship side in a cup competition. And obviously that's where he played. And that's obviously the level of opposition we were playing against when he did play at left back. So, yeah, I mean, if you're playing against clearly inferior opposition, then you're going to be on the front foot. I think there's some merit in it, because it allows you to kind of overload on that flank. But I think if you're playing against any kind of serious opposition, then I think things have gone very badly wrong if Moussa Gineppo is your starting left back.
Even saying it out loud just seems a bit nervy, doesn't it? This close to the start of the season.
It's like playing Shane Long as a holding midfielder.
Yeah. Can you imagine it? Second game of the season, Man United have got Jadon Sancho making his debut and we've got Gineppo at left back. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
I'm nervous already. It kind of brings me on to our best 11. And do we know, and can we agree between us, what our best 11 is? If we start at the back with the keeper,
I've got no idea there already.
Well, I was going to say, Dan, do you think the plan is still to rotate the keepers this season?
I hope not.
Yeah, same.
I'm not a fan of that. I never have been. No, I'd be surprised if it is. Yeah, I don't know Ralph's thinking on what he's going to do with the goalkeepers. My preference is Alex McCarthy. I I would like him to start, but again, I generally have no idea. He's obviously been playing one, resting the other during pre-season, so it's, you know, your guess is kind of as good as mine. At the moment, if I was to bet on it, I think I'd expect Alex to play against Everton, but again, I can't say that with any real certainty.
There isn't any other club that's rotating keepers as often as we do in the Premier League. Who starts in goal for you, Glenn?
Fraser Forster. I think him at his best is better than McCarthy at his best. And that's basically it. I mean, McCarthy was a bit flappy again on Saturday. On the first goal in particular, and on, what game was it? He got caught with the ball. Swansea, wasn't it? He got tackled in the penalty area again. So, to me, you know, if you're going to take pre-season as a guide, Forster's not as good as with the sweeper keeper stuff, but I think he's less likely to chuck one in his own net at the moment than McCarthy is. So I'd go with him for that reason alone.
Which means you get the casting vote, Steve.
Yeah, I'm on team Fraser. Yeah, same sort of thing, I think. And I do actually think that we've kind of seen last season that Forster has clearly made reasonably good strides on a lot of the sort of extra stuff that we ask our goalkeepers to do these days. I mean, one game that particularly stands out is that Wolves Cup game last season, where Forster was sweeping up behind the defence superbly. There were a couple of times where Wolves put good balls through in behind, and he was out sweeping up and heading things clear and putting in excellent tackles and things like that. And you can clearly see that he's worked really hard on that side of things. Because, I mean, yeah, I mean, if we'd had this conversation 2 years ago, and you're looking for someone who's going to be able to play that kind of sweepy up role, then Forster wouldn't even be in the conversation. But I just think he's probably the slightly better all-round keeper, and gives us that kind of ability to play a slightly higher line if that's the way we want to go. Although I still kind of find that a little bit dangerous with our lack of pace.
Yeah, agreed. So if we're ruling out Gineppo at left back, who's going to be the back four for you, Glenn?
Well, it doesn't look like Vestergaard's going to be ready to play, having only just got back from holiday. So it's going to be, I would say, Perreault, Salisu, Bednarek and Walker Peters.
Agreed, Dan?
Yeah, that'd be my back four.
So we know that James Ward-Prowse is going to be missing on Saturday too. So are we expecting Diallo and Romeo in the middle?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't see it being any other combination, to be honest.
Which brings us on to, I guess, the front, should we say, two, and the wingers. Where are the goals going to come from on Saturday, Steve?
I think Armstrong's got to start. And I would say Redmond's probably played himself into a starting place with his performances. Admittedly, mostly against Championship opposition, but he's looked slightly reinvigorated this summer. And I think the two I would go with Teller and Adams. Again, I mean, there's not a huge wealth of kind of evidence to go on, but from what I've seen, they've struck up something of a partnership. And I think, yeah, there's something to be excited about there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I think that is the way Ralph will go. I'm not sure it's the way I would go. I think I'd have Walcott in there somewhere, but or maybe even Livramento from the start. But I think what Steve said there with Redmond on the left and Teller up front, I think that's what it will be.
I think the key will be trying to get Livramento into that starting lineup somewhere. If he is that good and the impact that he had on Saturday, it's where does he fit into that starting 11 if Walker Peters is playing as well? Is there room for them both, do you think, there, Glenn, somewhere?
Yeah, definitely, because he's played right wing, you know, right midfield, right wing for Chelsea Academy as well. So, and Armstrong's versatile. He can play off the left-hand side. And in a lot of games, he ends up over the left-hand side anyway. You know, he tends to swap over with whoever's nominally on the left and do some good work over there. So they could certainly look to do that. Livramento's got form, apparently, playing on the left-hand side as well. But he's known to prefer the right-hand side. So there's certainly no reason why him and Walker Peters can't be in the same side. And I ultimately think that is what will happen.
Would Walcott start up front for you as well, Dan, or Theo from the bench?
No, I think I'd have Theo on the bench. I'd go Adams and Teller up top. They'd be the two I'd go with. And just thinking about that, how you could fit Livramento in to the team. Yeah, I thought Armstrong was pretty impressive as a central midfielder last season because he arguably carries the ball better than any other player in the team. And I think if you partnered him alongside Romelu, it may actually give him a bit of freedom. So, yeah, I think it would be Romelu and Diallo. But I do think if you want, you could put Armstrong next to Romelu, and that obviously frees up a number 10 spot. And Livramento could just slot in there and still play with Redmond on the other side.
That's quite an attacking option, isn't it? I think having Armstrong in the eight role, basically Ward-Prowse's position.
Yeah.
That's what they did for the tail end of last season, though, really, wasn't it? And Armstrong was, he learned to be much more disciplined, because what I was worried about when he first played in the centre is that he didn't seem to, you know when not to run forward, if that makes sense.
Romeo is better defensively than Prowse.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So, you know, Romeo is not glamorous going forward, but you could rely on him just sort of sitting in front of the defence.
Yeah, I think
Armstrong was given a bit of freedom.
The starting 11 will be as we kind of discussed, but I think the options later on in the game will be, you know, Livramento to the right, Armstrong either to the middle or to the left, and, you know, Walcott probably will come on up front, I would imagine, you know, if Teller can't do 90 minutes. So there's a few options there, and it's not all doom and gloom, which seems to be the general mood about the place at the moment.
Coming from you, that's good though, right?
Coming from me, yeah, that's good. I mean, I think Everton's a decent chance, to be honest. Yeah.
Apart from the fact that it's Everton.
Yeah. And we've got to forget about that. But it's, you know, there's a good chance for at least a point up there, because they seem a bit of a mess. You know, they got tanked 4-0 by Man United a couple of days ago, didn't they? I always find it slightly bizarre when Premier League clubs play each other in pre-season friendlies. But they got tanked by Man United. They got a new manager in who they don't like. They've got, you know, other issues. They've signed some very strange players as well, that you just didn't expect them to sign, a bit like Damari Gray and Andros Townsend. It's strange. It's the only word I've got for it. So I don't think they're in the best of shape. Their best player is Richarlison. He's been playing in the Copa America and the Olympics. So who knows whether he's going to be playing for them. So, yeah, I think there's no reason to go out there and think that we can't get anything other than, as Steve said, we never get anything at Everton.
It's going to be a couple of weeks before everybody's back and all the squads are up to full strength when we really can start to make judgments, I assume. But new manager coming in, the fans at Everton were sort of divided on that one, weren't they? I wonder whether that will sort of play into our hands a bit on Saturday afternoon.
Well, they were divided in that they either hated him or really hated him. There wasn't really anything sort of like in between, I think they've kind of settled down now, and it's been a bad summer for them, because, you know, Ancelotti really really stabbed them in the back, sort of thing, and then to get an ex Liverpool manager who is so synonymous with Liverpool, and he talks about them all the time, and when he went back with his other clubs, he was waving at the fans and all that sort of stuff. I can't wait for the first interview where he actually accidentally says Liverpool instead of Everton. That's just going to be hilarious.
But, or turns up at the wrong training ground.
Yeah, or the wrong dugout or something like that.
He'll do the Ronald Koeman thing of having a Christmas tree with red baubles on.
Yeah.
we do never win our first game, though, do we? That's always the problem with us. We tend to be quite slow out the block, Steve.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's quite convenient, actually, to marry that with Everton away, because then you're only sacrificing one game, effectively.
Get it over and done with.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be honest, I'm expecting very little from Saturday, regardless of how well or badly we might play. It genuinely doesn't seem to matter what the relative positions or situations are at either club. We will go to Goodison and we will not win. Even if we are comfortably in front and comfortably the better side for 90 minutes, they will pop up with a deflected equaliser off someone's arse in the 97th minute to deny us.
Get your mortgage on it, everybody.
Yeah, and the Gladys Street end will celebrate like they won the league. despite having been silent for the previous hour and a half. It's just the way it goes for us up there.
I guess the other thing is, I'm struggling to think what sort of a team we are going to be this season. Are we going to be? We talked last year, I think, about we're going to be quite hard to beat. We're going to be pressing. We're going to be scoring goals. I don't, as I sit here ahead of the new season, I don't know if I could tell somebody what sort of team we're going to be going into this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to pick our players in fantasy football initially. I'd probably give it a month, and as you say, see how we're looking in terms of, are we going Are we attacking teams in certain situations? Are we looking like a like quite an impressive counter-attacking side? Are we looking solid defensively? I mean, from what I've seen of pre-season, I think that last one is probably going to be an initial no, but we'll grow into it. And hopefully, if and when Vestergaard's back, if he's still with us, I mean, God knows what's happening on that. But yeah, I mean, are we going to be defensively sound? Toss a coin at this stage, I think.
Mm. Let's get your score predictions for Saturday then. Do you want to start, Steve, following your optimism there?
I'll go 2-1 Everton win.
Glenn?
I'll go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I fancy a bit of 1-1 as well, actually. I think we'll get a goal and then get pegged back. Dan, what do you think?
I was going to go 1-1, but we can't all do the same. So I'll go 1-0 Southampton.
1-0 Southampton.
Madness.
Okay. ever the optimist.
Well, let's hope a new signing maybe on the score sheet for Saturday. You mentioned the Fantasy League there as well. I should say that there is a Total Saints Podcast Fantasy League, which has been set up this year for patrons only. Are we all in? Have we all got our teams?
No.
Right. I know that you had to be cajoled into this last season, so I didn't expect it to be any different. You've got until Friday, I think, at lunchtime. Steve, Glenn, you got your teams?
Yeah, mine's done, but already needs some rework because I think a couple of players I've picked are already injured. I think Robertson got injured today for Liverpool, so need some frantic changes.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, I'm mid table mediocrity every single time. Every year I've played it, I've always been the same. Finished the equivalent of 13th in the league. That's me. I have the only person I really care about beating is my son, and he beat me last year, so I've got that to worry about.
But more of the same.
I'm not going to be worrying anyone up near the top of the leaderboard, put it that way.
All right, well, we've got some new levels for patrons, which I'll get onto in just a minute. Dan, do you want to just remind us about The Athletic, because you've been there for a year now, is that right? How people can find out more about your work, and we've referenced some of the articles today. There's a whole wealth of stuff on there that's worth catching up with ahead of the new season.
Yeah, so easy to just theathletic.com. I think it's then /Southampton is where you'll find all the Southampton stuff. Or just follow me on Twitter and you'll see all the sort of stuff I post and can head through to the website that way.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me this week, chaps. I know it's my first one, so thank you for bearing with me. And I look forward to chatting after the Everton game next weekend. Don't forget, if you're interested in becoming a Total Saints Podcast patron, there are some different tiers this year, ranging from the Bobby Stokes tier for just £5, which, as well as supporting the pod, it also gets your entry into the Fantasy League. Then there's the Ricky Lambert tier, we've got the Francis Benali tier, and we've got the Matthew Letizia tier, which is essentially all the bells and whistles. I think you get to go on holiday with either Glenn or Steve if you subscribe to that. And a big thanks to our first Francis Benali tier member, Nick Reed. His pledge gets him a thanks at the end of every episode for his support. Thanks a lot, Nick. Great to have you on board. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you're listening. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we'd love a rating and a review as well. And you can always get in touch with us on the socials. We are at Total Saints Pod on Twitter and Facebook. And you can drop us an email via the website. Because we are...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about it.
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.